accession number 1676, Mr. H. Bell, reel 4.
Bell, reel 4. Have you any other memories of Bridlington which stand out?
Yes, egg and chips. Posa's favourite. There was a little place in the house. She had opened a front room up, and she served egg and chips. Very popular. On the way back from Bridlington to the house where we lived, you know, we passed it, and it was very nice just popping in. I don't know where she got all the eggs from, but she did. And I say, Force's favourite, egg and chips.
What was the army food like at this stage that you were getting?
Nothing to shout about. Nothing. We were well fed, but nothing much. I don't remember it really. I remember one time in the dining hall, I was there, and they all complained about the meal, and they wanted me to go for the duty officer. So I went, wandered around for the duty officer. I've talked about this since to somebody, and they said he always disappeared and hid himself, and I eventually found him. And brought him back, that the men are complaining about the meal. When I got there, there wasn't a man to be seen. There was just a lot of half-eaten meals on the table. That's what they had to put up with. No other meals, but nothing to shout about. Just adequate.
Did you get leave?
Yes. Not a lot. I only remember about 3 leaves. Some men chanced weekend, you know, but it's very typical Bridlington. Then you've got to go into York, and then it's not a good route at all. It takes a long time. Oh, I never got home from York except for a leave. Yes,
and coming home on the leave.
I had it because I had been in Ireland all day with no leave at all. So I got a leave somewhere around about Christmas. It was, yeah.
Coming home, of course, as a soldier in uniform, how would your family receive you?
A tea party, wasn't it? A tea party. A disastrous one. I spent some time at the stores at the signal office, and I found some dummy ammunition. It was a nickel with red stripes, and I said you couldn't mistake it. It wasn't live, it was dummy. And I had 2 rounds. Of course, when you went home, you had your rifle with you and all your gear. And we had this tea party, and the best tea service was out. Can I see your gun? You know, he said. Well, he loaded like this, and I had this dummy round in, and I put it in, and I ejected it, and it flew up in the air and dropped on one of the good teacups. It split it in half. I'll never forget that.
So you carried your rifle home with you only?
Yes, yes. Oh, also, I had got a new uniform, and it was gas, anti-gas impregnated. It was a horrible pink, horrible pink colour, and it smelled dreadful. And I had to go home in that. And I also the day before I was going home, there was a parade, and the sergeant came round and haircut. So I got a regimental haircut, real crop. So I went home with this horrible battle dress and a crop.
Did you have gas precaution training?
Yes, yes, yes. We had a peculiar sergeant in the headquarters company. I'm trying hard to think of his name, and I can't. I'm going to waste time. He got all the odd jobs. All the odd jobs nobody else has wanted, he got them. And you see, now this is your he was Northumbrian. This is your respirator. Now a different one here is called it a gas mask. It's a respirator. Now when you get the warning gas, you grab your gas mask. And yes, we had something, you know. We went into a room with the gas mask and took it off for a while, put it on again just to see what it was like. It wasn't nice.
Where did you carry your respirator as regards the rest of the equipment on your body?
When it was on your chest.
And you'd be trained to get it out quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also had on the range. We had to fire rounds with the gas mask on. It wasn't very pleasant. Other than that, I never wore it. It was a useless thing, really. I think it was in India when we dispensed with them all together. Pretty certain it was. We were in assault division, you know. We were specially trained in this in landing craft assault. And we did. Can I jump ahead a bit? But the respirators. We did a landing of a barge. We did a landing and we had been doing a lot of training. We had May West, that's the inflatable round on air, with the respirator. And we had a toggle rope, which is a rope with a loop at one end and a wooden thing, so it could be extended to make a long rope. We had 100 rounds of badly of ammunition. We had a long jungle knife. We had a rifle. We had a trenching tool, 4 grenades. We were like Christmas trees, you know. We had all this gear and the respirator there. You could hardly move. We had to do 13-mile forced march in the heat. In the middle of the day in India, with that lot on, there were 6 men left the battalion. We never saw them again. The last 5 mile of that march was up a railway track. And have you walked on a railway track? Never walked up sleepers. Well, at such and such a distance, you can't step from one to the other. And there's no space to take a step in between. You've got to really stride forward and try to... you can't march. Well, we did 5 mile of that, and 6 men left the battalion, finished physically, never came back again. 13 mile flat out in rubber, 105 degrees.
How long were you in Bridlington?
From 1940 to 1942. We left for India in April 42.
From Bridlington itself?
No. We had been about the country in that time. We moved to name is now, dear me. This is where the old brain doesn't come in. Cheltenham. We had a short spell down to Bury St Edmunds. We left the 2nd Division and we were joined the 42nd Armative, and we were wheeled. We went on foot. It was marvellous. Radio was in the PU, in the truck. Everybody was on wheels. And it lasted for a month or two. I can't remember exactly how. Down at Bury St Edmunds, the terrible camp we were in. It was infected with scabies. It was a dry summer, and it was a sandy camp, and everybody was getting scabies. It was terrible. And when you went down to the Bury St Edmunds at night, to get a drink, you could hear all the chickening. But the blinds were down and the doors were shut. You couldn't get a drink. Bury St Edmunds was a hell of a place. So we went there, and then when the division got orders to go abroad, they sent for us to come out of the division.
What time would this be when you were at Bury?
I don't know.
You said that the people weren't particularly friendly, were they?
They weren't friendly at all. No. We spent quite at times at Cheltenham. We were at Cheltenham for a long time. We left from Cheltenham to go abroad.
Had the commander changed? Had the command changed of the battalion?
The battalion commander? No. I'm a bit confused about this. You're not in touch with your commander. He couldn't go abroad. His health wouldn't allow him to go abroad. I didn't find that out until we were abroad, that he wasn't with us. But apparently it broke his heart, he wanted to go with his battalion.
So what was the condition of the battalion at this time?
First class fighting unit. Proud. We were proud of our battalion, and it was a good battalion, a good first class fighting unit, well trained. Everybody got along. In the signal platoon, we all got along well together, but we were friendly with everybody. It was a good battalion, yes.
As part of your training, were you told about the history of your battalion and your regiment to build up this?
No. No, we never told anything like that.
You went to Cheltenham, and you say you were there for quite a while. Do you recall what you were doing at Cheltenham?
Well, we didn't know very much. I mean, we went out on route march and on schemes and went out with companies, around about the place. But we did. Other than that, we just stunts, what we call stunts, schemes.
Were things changing as the experiences of the war were coming through? I'm thinking in terms of the fighting tactics and so forth. Were they changing at all?
Well, they were changing as much as when we were in Brittany. We were on coastal defence. We didn't move much. We stayed put. But at Cheltenham, we moved around the countryside. It had its lighter moments. The signal office was near the entrance on the road, and there was a church just across the road. Well, you've got to attend church parade. Once a day, they can't make it. So we got this. We used to go across the Holy Communion, out of your bunk, quickly get your stuff on, get off the Holy Communion, and that was it, wasn't it? Back in and back into your bunk, till they found out. And the first thing I knew was, Corporal Bell, two men. When the battalion moved up the church, they had to leave their rifles stacked outside the church. Charlie Harry got the job, didn't he, with his two men guarding the rifles while others were in church. So that stopped the Holy Communion lock. The army always wins, don't they?
Had you received a second stripe by this time?
No.
Still on one stripe?
I never did. You see, you can't. There's only in the signal platoon a sergeant, a corporal, and four lance corporals. You can't get promotion. You're stuck. You just can't get promotion.
Your signal sergeant, we haven't talked about him. What was he like?
Horrible. Detestable.
What did they call
Murgatroyd.
Him?
That's like the villain of the piece, isn't it? Murgatroyd. Horrible. Didn't like us. For the reason I told you, he failed his course. So he couldn't take a signal course with his son, and it didn't suit him. He didn't like us. An old regular he was. I don't know how he got to be a signal sergeant. He was brainless. He, anything but bright. Very, very regimental,
Made your life a bit difficult at times?
Yes.
What kind of things might he have done to do that?
Hmm?
What kind of things would he do to you?
Just just been unpleasant. Given you rotten duties and, you know, possibly. Never pleasant to us, never. Fortunately, I say, we were both in the same boat, both of us, and so we backed each other up and it was bearable. We were good instructors. We were good, and he wasn't. That's it.
So you were there, how long were you at Cheltenham?
I couldn't tell exactly. We left Cheltenham and went up to Glasgow and in April.
Did you enjoy Cheltenham? Was it a good posting, good base?
We were right on the outskirts. No, not particularly. Don't forget, I was still a married man and still on short. Finances weren't good at all. I didn't get out much at all, not really.
You'd make an allowance to your wife, of course.
Yeah. It would have been very difficult if I hadn't got cigarettes left from home. It would have been terrible money, you know, it was. Terrible.
Had you come across
I remember, cigarette-wise, we were invited out to a land army loggers. They were doing forestry, and they ran this dance, and we were invited out to this dance, and we were sitting there. We didn't have a smoke. We didn't dance either. But we sat there and we watched them dancing, and then we spotted a big cigarette end just being nipped out on the floor. And we couldn't get out to it because they were dancing around, and we kept watching it, and people were coming around and kicking it, and it was getting nearer and nearer and nearer, and we were just getting ready to pounce when somebody put their foot on it. Yeah, that was a land army. That tell you the what sort of amusement we had. We left Cheltenham went up to Glasgow for embarkation. The night before we left, we couldn't get moved to get a beer, and somebody said they knew a good cider place, a cider cellar. We went down this cellar. There was three huge barrels, huge barrels about 6 foot diameter of cider. Scrumpy. That's the first and last time I've had scrumpy. I don't remember getting on the train to go to Glasgow. It's a good job I had friends. I've got all my kid together. I just don't remember leaving Cheltenham to go to Glasgow.
How did you feel when you were told you were now about to go abroad?
How would you feel? I don't know. A lot of regular soldiers at the battalion, you know, you can't soldier away to get abroad. Great. We're going to India. Smashing. You get there, you get shaved in bed, you get this, you get this, that. Marvellous place, India, according to these old regulars. Well, no. There had been telling us about India. Because they came back in 1937, you see, after a long spell in India. They came back home in 1937, and they'd been telling us how wonderful it was in India. I've got the wrong end of the stick. And so we didn't know where we were going. When we had been going abroad, we had Destination X on our kit bags. And so we thought we were going to the Middle East. No, that's what we thought. And all these regulars say, I wish we were going to India. We had a marvellous time at that time. And then, of course, when we were 2 days out, they told us we were going to India. Oh, hell. Not that bloody place again.
Yeah. Had you had the embarkation leave?
Yes.
That must have been a sad moment for you? If you married with your wife?
Yeah. Yes. Wasn't very happy. Especially as the bus wouldn't let her off work. It wasn't very good.
Were you living near your parents at this time?
Near enough, yes. 5 minutes walk away, yes. She had, Doris had managed to get a house next to her mother, bless her. Oh, her mother and I didn't get on. She didn't like me and I didn't like her. But anyway, the house was there, that was next door. So so she got it in there. So we had this house. Yeah. What's next?
So you 2 days out, you said, it must have been a great adventure for you to be going abroad, in the sense that you'd never been out of England. Then.
Yes, we left the Clyde, and all the workmen, bless them all, were here. Hey! It was all right for them, wasn't it? So when we were, 2 or 3 days out, they told us we were going in there. We had a lot of trouble in the ship. We were a regular battalion, remember, and very, very well run. And the colonel, I don't know who it was now, I can't remember his name, decided to have a route march around the ship, Empress of Canada, 22,000 tonner it was, beautiful ship. All the best apartments were all boarded up, you know, but nobody allowed in them. But he decided to have a route march. The captain, "You're breaking my ship up," he says. "Stop it immediately." So we did route marches then and canvas shoes.
What were conditions like on the ship?
Considering how many troops were on, good. I've never had such wonderful bread. The bread was beautiful. Used to go down to the galley and collect it, you know, every day, and it was beautiful bread, and the meals were quite good. I think it was veal we used to get, white meat anyway, of some sort. The conditions were quite good. When we got near the tropics, we were allowed on deck. 20 minutes at a time, till we got sunburned, you know. We slept on a deck, midships, with hammocks, but none of us liked hammocks, so we slept on the floor. Hammocks are awful things to get in and out of. The beer in it, but was the worst beer I've ever had in my life. We used to go and collect it in an enamel bucket. It lasted for about a week, I think it was. Then the supplies ran out. But it was like vinegar. It was terrible stuff. Terrible. The captain was very strict about his ship. He wouldn't allow us to blanco on the ship's baths. Oh, the ship's baths. I was told I had to take men from the companies, teach them flag drill and the ship's baths. Well, the ship's baths must have been above the boiler. There was the bottom was red hot. It was empty. But at one end of it, for some reason, there was a whole lot of water. And one end, one side. And every time I'd be taking these blokes, giving them flag drill, and then the ship would roll, and this big wall of hot water would come swilling across the bus. Everybody had to jump clear. So anyway, the captain said, "No blankoing on my ship. You'll make a mess of it." So when we got to Cape Town, the colonel had us blankoed on the quayside, alongside the ship.
As it got hotter, it became less comfortable.
We were allotted so much time to sleep on deck. Somebody night, you took turns as they rotated to sleep on deck. I don't recall it being uncomfortably hot. I don't recall it being uncomfortably hot. It's a big ship, and I suppose it was well ventilated. I should imagine, you know. After all, it took passengers, you know, so it must have had a good ventilation system. The Empress of Canada was a starship, 22,000 tonner cruise ship.
You'd been convoy.
It was a big convoy. Yeah. Yes. I remember the ship next to us was a ship called the Del Pacifico. It was a beautiful streamlined, oil-fired ship. Lovely, lovely, beautiful lines it had. Big, wide funnels, and all streamlined. And we had an uneventful trip.
How did they keep you occupied? It was a long way, and you must have got boring.
I've told you the chess with the signal officer.
You didn't have the usual ship's game, like housey-housey and...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. The ship's RSM ran that, didn't he, with his perks. Oh, yes. You're plenty housey, but I didn't have any money to play housey with. I don't know what to say. Oh, the ship's RSM took his cut off every house, didn't he? They must have retired millionaires, those fellas.
Was this resented by the men, to see this happening?
Not really, no.
Sports at all on the ship, of any kind? Boxing, no. This kind of thing?
Don't recall. Concerts? I don't recall any. You amuse yourself.
Did you have any duties to do?
No. Just the taking the flagville and so on. We had little sort of lectures, isn't it? Time fillers, that's all. What I remember most about the ship was when we got into the tropics. Was a beautiful night up at the sharp end, all the phosphorescence streaming past the bow of the ship, and a beautiful warm air, you know, and a velvety blue sky. It was beautiful, you know, just stand there and bask, soak it in. When we left, we got to Cape Town. We got to Cape Town, and Cape Town was one of the most beautiful sights I've ever seen. After all that time of blackouts, coming in, brilliant. All the shops were lit up, full of Cadbury's chocolate and fries chocolate, full of everything, all blazing light. You've got no idea what it was like after the year or two of blackouts. To see streets lit up and shops lit up like that. Beautiful.
Did you get ashore at Cape Town?
Yeah. I've never done many things in my life I've regretted. But I've always felt so guilty about this. We got Flacker Hart and I got our show pass. I've got it in my that thing. And we went ashore, and there was a lot of people on the quayside. And this couple with a baby came up and asked us, would like to go to tea? You know? Oh, I said, oh, yes. So they told us how to get to it and everything else. But that was plans, Gary and Clay, wasn't it? We got into a pub. It was a beautiful pub with stars in the sky. You know? It looked like it was a beautiful, beautiful pub. And we got a pint in, and before we knew where we were, the pints were rolling in. The pints rolled in from all sides, you know. We didn't have to pay anything. It was marvellous. We supped them all, and we were rolling when we came out. we went for a walk in this park to sober up. We were strolling up, and park bench, and there was a girl and a fella sitting on it. And Flack and I, we rolled up, and all of a sudden this girl shoots a leg out in front of us like that and slaps it, as she says, what do you think of that for a lump of meat? That staggered us. she was a silk stocking model, and she had beautiful legs. that's as far as it went. She had lovely legs. And there was a lovely piece of meat. I don't know who the fellow was. That all stood out of our mind. Was anybody to do that, you know? Just stick their leg out and say, what do you think of that for a lump of meat?
Did you stay in Cape Town for a period
of
time?
So we didn't get to these people's tea, you see. And I've been ashamed of myself ever since. I'm not ashamed of many things, but I am ashamed of that.
Did you stay in Cape Town for any other time?
No, we weren't. We were lucky to get in at all. The convoy coming the other way before us was Australians. That nearly wrecked the place. Terrible lot of trouble. Terrible lot of fighting and so on. And they weren't going to allow any troops in at all, but they allowed us in for half day. After that, we marched out to camp. We went up in the mountains, it was. We went up in the mountains to this camp.